live from my new sick-ass gamer chair, which I don't think is an intro that I've used yet, and if I have, I'm really sorry, but just pretend like I didn't. It's the Character Issues Podcast! And today, you have your Character Issues host. I don't know why I said today, because it's always, I've had a really interesting day at work. It's Brian Edwards.
Thank you, Leah. Leah, you
sound...
the worst
intro I think I've ever given.
Smooth.
You sound like your FPS is higher now because of your sick-ass gamer chair.
My,
do you feel like you move
FPS,
faster?
I'm very smoothly animated.
Yeah, your IRL
I had a moment
FPS.
Where I was like, I don't have an intro, and then I was like, what about my chair? And then I was like, did I do this last week? And I was like, it doesn't matter.
No, I mean, well, last week was very different because it was a whole 2 weeks ago time of recording, so who can remember anything that happened between then and now? I'm just amazed that we're all still here and kicking, and yes, I am Brian Edwards, and this is the Character Issues Podcast, episode 21. We're doing it. We're like sailing to new heights. That's not soaring to new heights. We're sailing to new heights. We're sailing up an uphill river to new heights, and I am joined, as always, by my wonderful introduction giver, Leah Haidu. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. I come to this podcast immediately after working most of the time. Uh-huh. And sometimes my brain hasn't quite reset itself yet. So that's when you get word vomit like what I just did. And you're welcome.
And we are very thankful for the word vomit. Coming to us live, which is super not live for recording. We're killing it. Rich Davison, how are you doing today?
Yeah. I'm actually pretty good, like really good, actually. I mean, I haven't come here straight from work, although, yeah, that's me, always boasting about my great mental health. People know that and love that about me. Yeah, it's pretty good. Like, personally, like coming out of crunch, so things should start to simmer down now and I should bring that kind of thunder that everybody's used to.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I sent out a warning on Twitter that they felt a tremor somewhere in the universe this evening. It's because we are, in fact, bringing the goddamn thunder as we do every week, where we are going to rank three new characters, and we're going to get this list up to 60 characters tonight, and I feel really good about that. But before we do, we're going to do what we do, how we do, makes me want to shoop. We're going to talk about what we've been playing lately, and I want to start with you, Rich, because I want to know... Has your love affair with Mr. Bo Jackson continued? Have you moved past the gridiron of American football and onto newer things? What say you?
No. I mean, yeah, I keep meaning to go back to playing more Tecmo Super Bowl, but I still don't quite understand what's going on. And I was chatting with Leah about this the other day. I don't know how to actually watch the Super Bowl in the UK. And to be honest with you, I'm not really sure if I would understand what was going on, even if I was watching it. But it sounds like a fun way to spend 4 and a bit hours. Mm. What have I been playing? Look, I'm a terrible human being. I've been playing Power Wash Simulator, and it sucks. Yeah. But I can't stop
playing.
Did you
see today's announcement? Regarding Power Simulator?
So, I mean, at the point of recording, let's put it this way, about 10 minutes ago, I was like, I'm done with this game. Like, this is ruinous for my mental health. It's that kind of nasty kind of progress that really kind of sinister progress where you're actually making such a small and incremental amount of progress that you might as well not be playing it, and yet somehow it's, like, slightly sweeter than the misery of just regular life. And I was like, yep, I don't need this anymore. And then they announced that they were doing the fucking Midgar stuff from Final Fantasy VII, and I was like, no.
Oh, shit, I didn't see that. Maybe I should play Power Watch Simulator.
I tell you, it's going to get me back in, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what would we do in a Midgar? I'm not really sure. Doing the Seventh Heaven bar, I suppose.
I mean, it's pretty filthy down there. I don't know if you've seen.
That is true. The Materia reactor, the Mako reactor. Maybe I'll watch a run through of it at fucking like 10 times speed or something so that I don't go insane doing it. But yeah, Power Simulator, never nice. Play it. It's enough to be sort of mildly active, well, interactive, but it's absolutely no fun whatsoever and yet extremely compelling.
That's awesome. Anything else you've been touching, or really just those surfaces, those wet surfaces?
Yeah, for sure. I've been playing a little bit of Dragon's Crown in preparation for the Kane and Rin show. I'm not on that show, however, I would like to play along with it. So I know it's multiplayer, and I was like, I'll get it at the point where the multiplayer has been going, and so I've been doing that. It's Dragon's Crown. It's basically a really good kind of belt scroller. I mean, I'm not really sure what there is to say in 2022 at this point. Probably find out in that Kane and Rin's recording. Gordon, but it's good. It's beautiful. It's grotesque in the same way, but it plays like a dream still to this day. An excellent game. And then finally, proudly, I can announce today that I completed Batman, the movie,
yes.
I guess, on NES. Decent game. Fucking ridiculously difficult towards the end.
Yeah. NES difficulty just shows its head in some interesting ways the later portions of those games.
Again, like sinister difficulty, like you need to do some super difficult platforming, and right on the point that you need to land, there's always an enemy that you can't sort of afford to take hits from, so it just gets nasty very quickly. But you'll be pleased to know that it's a very faithful interpretation of the movie, including the scene where Batman punches Ed 209 from Robocop to death.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful to see that reenacted in 8-bit format.
I always, like, whenever I'm playing those NES games, I'm always thinking to myself, like, this isn't an arcade. You already have my money. You don't need to be sucking quarters out of me. Why is this so goddamn hard? Well, that's awesome, though, you played through it. Did you do that? Did you save state your way through that? Because that's the only way I've beaten that game.
I could get up to the second to last. So each stage has got maybe one or two stages itself. And I could get up to the, I think it was 5-2, which is the last platforming section. And then you get this boss, which is just mental. Like, it's just like you are guaranteed to take hit points. And it's mostly like a damage race. So I was like, yeah, I want to see the end of this now. And also the Joker at the end is no pushover. You need to have like plenty of bullets and plenty of hit points. So I was like, I think I'd like to see the end. So yeah, it's good. I play that first one. I would have been, what, like 4 year old. So to actually get that one off the list from 23 years is about 33 years. I wish 23 years. 33 years is like a relief.
That's awesome. Well, you know the Joker, who's well known for being able to take 400 bullets to the face before dying. So once again, true to life. I'm going to save you for last, Leah, only because one of the games that I finished, I think, will lead into one of the games you're playing now. But I got a little sick over the weekend and spent a lot of time in bed, unfortunately. But fortunately, after the Nintendo Direct, they dropped a bunch of Game Boy Advance games onto the Switch NES or Switch Online subscription. So I just, like, beat WarioWare again and just have been trying to get my scores upgraded under Mario. That game's fucking incredible, as always. I played through that. I'm like halfway through the Minish Cap. I'm like halfway through Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga. It's just been a goddamn delight. And I've been playing a shit ton of Game Boy Tetris. Even though I have Tetris Effect installed on my Xbox, I am just playing the Game Boy version of Tetris just because.
They're different. Yeah.
They are, for sure.
Different purposes for those two games, I would argue.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been spending, I spent all weekend just nutsing around with that. I tried that Kuru Kururin. Is that right? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
I think so. Yeah.
You control a spinning bar, and, like, you just got to navigate it through a maze. It's wonderfully Japanese in all the correct ways. I've been enjoying that. So I spent most of my time with that over the weekend. But before that, I had a day off last week, and I think that I shared this with you two on Slack. I committed the entirety of that day, my entire day, to playing and finishing Yakuza 5.
Yeah, you did.
Which I rolled credits on at about 55 hours, and my completion percentage was, wait for it, 39%. Which I was very disturbed until I realized that you got a percentage point for you have to eat every item at every restaurant. So, like, I've easily bumped that up to, like, 60 or 70% with not much extra playing time. But so, yeah, that's what I spent most of my time with, which I believe leads us to you, Leah.
Yeah, so I, as you mentioned, I have also, I've started Yakuza 5. Mm-hmm. I've only put about 8 hours into it so far, and most of that time has been driving and or racing a taxi. That's where I am.
Yes.
I did however many taxi, there's like 35, 36 uh-huh. taxi missions. I've done all of those, plus all the races.
So you've met the Spangled Meteor then.
I did meet the Spangled Meteor.
Yes, okay, good.
Yeah. So I now have a pink cab with angel wings on the hood and spinning rims. Yeah, it's pretty good. I think that the message, Brian, that I sent you in Slack was something to the effect of Yakuza makes me angry because it's so good. and yeah, I love these games. They're so stupid. And I know that, you know, some people have problems with them, but I can't not. I love Yakuza. They bring me into my happy place.
Yes.
So I also, let's see, I burned through a couple of games for the Kane and Rins podcast. I also have been playing Dragon's Crown. What Rich did not mention is that getting to the point where you can actually do co-op is like 4 or 5 hours into the game.
It's
you
a cannot crazy play co-op. Choice, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird wild. Because, you know, I had mentioned, because I am on that show, and Brian, you are as well.
Yes, yes.
I had mentioned to Rich, hey, you want to play some co-op? And so, you know, I thought, silly me, I thought that you would just be able to start the game and, you know, maybe do a little bit of training or watch an intro cutscene or something and then just start playing co-op. It's not the case. You have to go through each of the stages one full time before they will let you do co-op. So I am also, I've played the game before, so this is a replay for me, but I am stopped currently at the point where you can go do the co-op. So can I ask you both a
brief question about Dragon's Crown really quickly?
Of course.
How do you both feel about the modest character design?
Brian, those are some big old titties.
It's very chaste, isn't it? Yeah,
chaste. I was telling Leah this the other day, Rich, when we were streaming Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, that I was playing that game and I was like, oh, it's like a side-scrolling beat-em-up, pretty cartoony, you know, I kind of like this fantasy art style they're committing to. It says Vanillaware every time you leave the tavern, that's hilarious. And then I walked into the shop and there was that shopkeeper. And she was standing over me. And my wife was like, what in the hell are you playing? I'm like, something apparently for when after the kids go to bed. that's what this is.
It is rated M for a reason. And that reason, for once, is not actually violent. I mean, it's kind of violent, I guess.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
I don't think that's the reason.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, and then also I played through Guacamelee again. That's still
great
a really good game. And I have played, actually screen sharing with Rich, we've played some Pentiment from the Xbox.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you guys liking that? Yeah, are you liking it? Because I was going to play Pentiment after Jeff Grubb on Giant Bomb was kind of saying all these wonderful things about it. And I started it like kind of in a late night and I was pretty tired. So it put me to sleep
easy.
So,
it is. I mean, it is a dialogue heavy murder mystery game. It's pretty slow paced. Like it is. But I don't think it's in a bad way. I am really enjoying it so far.
Cool. I want to go back to it for sure.
It's very in depth. It goes real hard on places you wouldn't really expect, I think. Just some of the descriptions of that life and that kind of culture and surroundings. And there's so much that you can do and so much that you can see. And it's, at least in the first part, like, it does the thing that, I don't know that it would be accurate to say that I like it when games do this, but I do find it compelling when games do this, is that they put you in a spot where there is no right answer. Like, okay, they're all bad. All of the answers are bad. So, it's, it has caught my attention pretty fiercely, I would say.
Cool. That's awesome.
I don't know, maybe, I think that there's, what, three kind
acts,
of sections of it, and I think we're coming towards the end of the second section.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm really interested in getting back to that one.
I recommend kind of pushing through that initial, like, so it's also one of those things that puts you in media res basically from the start, and it's kind of deliberately a little bit obtuse. But like when you break through that first maybe hour, 2 hours, it's just so good. Like, I'm not a person who finds narrative, especially dialogue driven games, to be very appealing because it grates on me. And I'm looking at the likes of like Oxenfree, like that sort of the kind of dialogue driven heavy character stuff usually turns me off because I find it pretty grating. But like the writing in this game is so intelligent and so funny, and the comedies, like just like intellectual, which I just find to be really stimulating. There's just some incredibly like dark humor, like
intellectual without being douchey, I would say.
100%, yeah. And like it's just choice driven as well, so you can be an absolute monster of a person or a saint, and like any game that has that kind of like, I don't know, like choices, the moral choices is usually like up there in my books.
Right. Well, that sounds rad as hell. And you guys have been playing that together. Is that a satisfying experience for whoever's not controlling the character?
I would say for me, it's probably better playing with Leah, who is a person really? Who studied like classical literature and makes a lot of the things very easy for me.
Up her own ass about this shit. We can all agree on that.
I never shut up about it. I find it pretty interesting that some of the stuff in here is just, I mean, it's deep, you know, like it is deep into that kind of study and that kind of branch of academia. And it's not writing to the point where like you're not going to understand this if you haven't
you know
done a master's degree in Renaissance literature like I have and blah blah blah, you know, it's not that, but if you have particular and I'm sure that like there's other backgrounds because it's set in Germany and it's set in like the early 1500s, so it's not it's not something that I think everybody is going to know every bit of this, but I think that a lot of people who have done study in kind of different areas of, you know, history or language or art or whatever are going to get kind of different extras out of it. And even if you haven't studied in any of those areas, like it is still really good and really compelling, like I said, and just it there's a lot to offer there with, you know, some little bonuses to make you feel smart if you recognize things occasionally.
Nice. That's it. That is, it's really great when a game can make you feel smart while simultaneously never making you feel stupid. It's a tough move to pull off. Well, that's fucking cool. That's going to move higher up on my need to play soon list.
Yeah, I would recommend it. I think you'll be into it.
So is that all for you, Leah?
I think so. Okay. It's going to be a lot of Yakuza going forward.
Oh, and I'm going to annoy you with all sorts of questions where you just say something that you just did and I scream, yes!
Theater Rhythm, the new Theater Rhythm comes out tomorrow. So guess who's buying the big stupid edition?
Yeah.
It's me.
I'm looking forward to hearing about that too because I'm not getting the big stupid edition, but I am getting that game.
I am. It comes with all the DLC.
Perfect. Well, I think that means we are ready to move on to the ranking section. No theme this week, as we've established very clearly that our odd-numbered shows will be unthemed, and the even number show will be themed. Let's try that again. You know what? We're just going to do what we want all the time, and there's nothing you can do about it. But tonight, we have no theme. Exactly. Just be hostile to everybody. But before we get to the ranking, we have to determine our character order. So this is where I turn it over to you, Rich. How are we going to decide this week?
Well, usually 10 minutes before every show, I panic and put together 5 questions. But because we are in close proximity to what I can confidently say is the most sacred day in the calendar for the Character Issues team.
My birthday?
Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Almost, Leah. Almost. I've decided to only ask one question, and I'm not even going to put it to somebody to roll the dice or make a decision. I'm just going to come out with it. So we will have the best answer goes first and the worst answer goes last. Yeah, so here we are. Ship 2 of the characters on the Character Issues list.
Okay.
So I've had the benefit of thinking about this. So if you guys want to kind of moot,
If you would like to go first, I think that's perfectly
cool. So for me, it's got to be Vincent Brooks and Garbador, the living garbage. And I think it's just because birds of a feather flock together more than anything. You know, you've got commonality, similar interests, both literal trash. It just seems to make a lot of sense, you know?
That's a really good one. I have a couple in mind, Leah, unless you want to go first? I'm happy to go if you're not.
No, ready. I think you go ahead. I have some things rolling around in my brain, but I'm not quite ready yet. So yes, please.
I think it's Big the Cat and Unguard the Swordfish. Who does Big the Cat love more than fish? And a giant fish that he can ride? I mean, the love story, it writes itself. Yeah, I mean, yeah, take that how you will, internet. I think that is a love story that writes itself. Big the Cat may be fishing, releases Unguard from one of its terrible crate boxes from under the sea, and they just find happiness with one another. And Guard shows Big the Cat about what being a fish is like, and vice versa. I think it's just happiness and love and stupidity forever.
I feel like, you know, what we need to do after this is create like an AVI video with Linkin Park in the background.
I was just say, do we get Linkin Park in the background?
Both of them. And really make this happen.
I agree.
That's powerful. I like it.
Well, thank you. I mean, it just came to me. It's my instinct.
You defined it, didn't you?
Yes,
I think. Yeah. It didn't really.
It came all over you. Is that what you said?
Yeah. How dare you? This is a civilized show. Now, Leah, I'm very interested to see who is your pairing here.
All right. So I do think that I have what I would like to see. That is Chris Redfield and Chadley, because Chris Redfield would shoot Chadley in his fucking face and fuck the hole.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You heard me.
Wow. Our poor little robot boy. You know, Chris Redfield is, you know, I could see it happening. Mm-hmm. I can see. And so you took it. I'm going to say you took a unique approach, uniquely American approach too, yeah. Leah, which I appreciate as an American.
How I do.
I'm not sure it's very romantic. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
No one said it had to be romantic.
Leah, well, I think there's an argument for yours to be both best and worst.
Yeah, so, that's what I was wondering. I'm not sure where I would actually place that.
Rich, do you have thoughts?
I'm not really sort of understanding the... I mean, I put my cards on the table, didn't I? I can't not think of them in a romantic capacity, and it disturbs me on a fundamental level.
Well, that's you, a romantic. Chris. I know this.
So I personally, no disrespect, Leo, because I think it's a wonderful scenario, would probably put Chris Redfield and Chadley last. I would definitely put On Guard and Big the Cat second, just because I'm still thinking of that. Excuse me, first. I'm thinking of that AVI, and then I put myself second because, you know, again, probably not the strongest relationship between a garbage bag and a human trash.
I think I like yours more than you're giving yourself credit for, Rich. What about you, Leah? Any strong thoughts?
I mean, I will concede reluctantly that my pairing is maybe not to everyone's taste. But I do think that Big the Cat and On Guard is a really good one. Potentially the only change I might have made. You know what? I don't even think it's a change. I think it's an addition. It would be boy. On Guard, Big the Cat, and Frog.
Oh my!
Just a little,
thruple
just,
there.
That's just the slimiest sandwich I've ever heard of.
You know how much Big the Cat likes his froggy. So
Oh my! How did I miss that, Leah?
I'm just gonna set myself a reminder on my phone to check out Deviant Art because I'm pretty sure this already exists in some capacity. Oh, you know those Sonic fans?
No doubts, absolutely none. But anyway, Brian, I think you should go first.
Okay, all right. So if the ranking is correct, it will be myself followed by Rich followed by Leah. In which case, I have the honor of introducing my character. All three characters today are romantics at heart. I think.
Yeah,
I'm looking at Rich's character. Yeah. I'm just getting terrified. But I will talk about mine first. I will not steal his thunder. My character was one that actually I was thinking about for last episode from a character from a 20-year-old game, and this is a character that sticks out to me. Maybe not for the reasons that people would think, but he is kind of the guardian / companion / mission giver to Jade, from Beyond Good and Evil, the game to which there's still supposedly a sequel coming out to at some point.
Sure.
And his name his name is Paige. Now, P-E-Y apostrophe J. So, I don't want anybody to... I think the spelling's very important.
It is.
So, Paige is a big old tusked pig who is essentially Han Solo.
Pretty much.
Are there any other questions?
I have never played Beyond Good and Evil. I don't know how to play it at this point, I'm not really sure I have much insight into Paige, so I'm looking at you guys to really sell them to me.
I think that you might still like Beyond Good and Evil. I've played it relatively recently because I think we did a show on it at some point not too distant past. Yeah. I don't know. What is time? But I recall thinking that it actually does hold up pretty well.
Unless I'm crazy, Leah, I think that was one of my first Kanan Rinse episodes.
Was it?
I think so. I could be making that up. I know I definitely talked about it somewhere. Maybe it was on a Sound of Play or something. But yeah, no, I think you can still get it on Xbox backward compatible. I'm pretty sure the 360
version. Yeah, you definitely can. I don't know about PlayStation, but I know that there was a GameCube version that, I don't know, is probably emulatable. I'm just saying. Hmm.
That's actually, I was going to mention that. That was how I played this game originally. I got it on GameCube when I was in college. That was the console that I had at the time. And because it got, like, out of nowhere, this game that I had never heard of, like, gets all these great reviews, and they say it's, like, different than anything you've ever played, which is kind of true.
I don't remember where I played it originally. I think it actually might have been PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird game. It's got a lot of, like, cool ideas that some of them delivers on, other ones it doesn't. I loved the photography sections of that game, like just running around and just snapping pictures of the wildlife and stuff. I thought it was really cool. But Paige is essentially, so Jade, who is a woman who has a cool ass staff that she can hit stuff with and also takes good pictures. Her uncle, quotes, is this pig.
I don't 100% remember how that works out, but yes, she does refer to him as Uncle Paige, and I guess he more or less raised her, right?
Right, yeah. So he runs like an orphanage/animal sanctuary mm-hmm. while also being a pilot and a mechanic, while also running the anti-government organization.
Oh, yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah, he's a multi-talented pig man.
So he's like... What the hell was her name? He's like a mixture of Nanny McPhee, Han Solo, and M from James Bond. Like, he's kind of like this mix of all these things. Except for the fact that he's always getting captured and you always need to save him. That's another big part of him. One of my favorite parts about Paige is that you get this impression that he's this very competent yet overly sloppy son of a bitch. He's a pig, so he's food's kind of a primary concern for Paige, and he really kind of is that role of pushing Jade along this kind of anti-establishment path. Is that fair, Leah? Would you say?
I think so. Yeah, he has a very you said that he is a competent person, and I think that's very true. He is kind of that jack of all trades. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even say master of none, because he is a really good mechanic. Like, yes. He is a major part of why you are able to kind of do the things that you do during that game, is because he's supplying you for large portions of it.
Yeah.
I have a question, if that's
yes,
okay.
Yes, please.
How does he sound? What kind of accent is Paige got?
Danny DeVito.
Yes. maybe with like a little like southern twinge to it, but yes, definitely Danny DeVito.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just didn't go there, but it seems to make a great deal of sense.
Like Danny DeVito from Matilda.
Does
that
right,
help?
Okay.
Does that help at all? But yeah, since you don't know Beyond Good and Evil, Rich, essentially there's this like like dictatorial government called the Domzy that kind of control everything, and Jade ends up becoming kind of the primary linchpin and like taking down that organization. And one of the cool things, I think, about Beyond Good and Evil is that it managed to do a few different types of gameplay really well.
Cool.
It's kind of like it's like a 3D platformer while also being this kind of photography game, while also being this kind of action adventure game. It just does these things at a high level. And Paige is basically just kind of like your impetus to go do everything. He's your quest giver. And the reason I picked him is because every single time that you do something for him or every single time that you succeed, he's always grumpy about it. Even if you're doing something that he asks you to do, he's a grumpy son of a bitch. And I love myself a grumpy son of a bitch. I just had a page of quotes up here, and I can't find it now. So somebody vamp when I refine this.
You know what I love about anthropomorphized pigs is that they're never, like, super, like, neat and tidy.
Contrary to what real pigs are like.
Yeah, real pigs, I mean, they may roll in mud, but that's because they can't sweat, so they have to cool themselves somehow, and that is how they actually do that. They're actually pretty fastidious animals, but I think that most game developers are pig racists.
Wow.
Ooh, that, you know what? A bold but fair statement, I would say, yeah. Leah.
A libelous statement, I'm sure.
Also, I found it because I put the wrong link into the show notes, so this will help you all out.
Nice.
Great. So if you're looking at Paige and you're looking at some quotes that he has, when he's happy or something goes well, he goes, chili con carne, because he loves chili. Chili with meat, apparently. That's Spanish.
Ooh, cannibalistic.
But not pork, because that would be creepy.
That'd be weird. But he yells fajitas.
I sometimes randomly yell fajitas.
Is this just like Mexican Tex-Mex food, I guess?
Yeah. Am I reading the wrong page? he'll say things like when you're in battle together and you succeed, not bad for a little girl and an old ham.
Get it? Hammer time.
Because
he uses a hammer, but also MC Hammer recorded a song.
And ham.
And also, that's true.
You nailed it.
Nice.
When people attack him, he says, "You know, those things love the taste of pork." Get it? Because he's a pig. He's a pig man. He's a pig man. So, aside from everything else, Paige will upgrade you with weapons. He gives you some abilities. Like, you get new abilities with these things called M-discs that you kind of find, and he allows you to kind of, you know, decode them to learn new things and upgrade your vehicle. And you have to go to this really cool, if I'm remembering correctly, aren't there a bunch of, like, Rastafarian animals that upgrade your ship, Leah, your boat?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think that Paige is a really cool, grumpy, fun character, and I like the way he looks. If you can't, he has the stereotypical 2003, hey, this character's got to have a scar over their eye because environmental storytelling. And he's got big old tusks and a big old belly, and he wears a cool leather jacket. And that's all I got to say about that.
Heck yeah.
Anybody got anything to say about Paige before we rank him on the list?
I am not a huge fan of the look in the Beyond Good and Evil 2 trailer.
No.
It's a little too not even realistic, because I mean that's not quite it, but they went sort of in a realism direction, I think, that is creepy to me.
Human teeth, isn't it?
And the hands. You see how he's holding like those bottles, and he's got the rings on. I'm like, no, that's no, sir. You're not supposed to have regular hands.
So just a couple bits of trivia before we get to it. Oh my god, I can't believe this says this. Okay, so Paige official profile says he smokes cigars, but he never does so in the game. So that's good. He doesn't smoke around the kids. Mm-hmm. His accent can be reflected as a peculiar Texan accent on Earth. So he's like from the South, like that. It also says his sack is green.
Sorry?
Yeah, you might want to get that checked out.
Yeah, that's That's not right.
SAC stands for Synthetical Atomic Compressor, or a backpack-like object to carry other items.
Right, of course, yeah.
His SAC is green. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, I'm not sure what does.
This is so true.
So I think we're ready to rank Paige. I'm going to tell you where I had an idea for Paige before he was even here. I had an idea for where Paige would go on the list, and I started thinking of Paige compared to her other animals and her anthropomorphic animals on this list.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Paige rises to the level of your Tizo or Morgana. I don't. But I do think Paige is more intelligent and more useful than a dumbass swordfish in the middle of a box at the bottom of an ocean. So I think Paige should be our new number 33 in between Garbodor and Ungard, because he's better than the swordfish. And also, what do pigs love to eat more than garbage?
Swordfish?
Oh. Well, I mean, maybe.
That was a rhetorical question, I see.
Leah's taking this very literally, you know. We're doing a food chain all of a sudden.
I think the only thing that likes to eat swordfish more than pigs is Big the Cat. Am I right? All right.
Ooh, nice.
Oh.
So you're welcome.
Yes.
My thought was 33 for Paige. Does anybody have any strong feelings one way or the other? Rich, I'd like to hear your thoughts because you're the least familiar, so you're just kind of coming into this blind.
I was kind of going to hope to... I mean, I defer to your greater knowledge and wisdom on Paige, but I'm really interested to hear what Leah's got, because I think I have some mitigating evidence that might help us to kind of put him in. I'm looking to see if there's a bit of contention here, because I think that's where I'm going to swoop in with the know-how.
Okay.
So I actually did not have a super strong position for him in mind going into this. And I'm seeing a lot of merit in what Brian has mentioned in having him be the new number 33. So I think, Rich, that it is up to you to convince me and potentially Brian as well of why that should not be the case.
Okay, cool. Well, I would like to put him at number 34, one above Odd Job and one below on God, just out of spite more than anything, because let's not forget that Paige was a character that was designed by one Michel Ancel, formerly of Ubisoft, a man who was investigated for toxic behavior in the workplace. And really, if I'm going to be perfectly honest, I'm getting below Oddjob because it's fucking Ubisoft and the scum company at this particular moment in time. So the fact is, we are preparing to put Paige above Pyramid Head. I don't know if that's the right thing. I just want to get my... to twist the knife a little bit on this particular situation.
Oh, you bring up some good points.
I think also, Pyramid Head is too low on this list, but...
We're going to talk about that at the end of the episode.
I wasn't going to go that deep at the moment, but...
So what I'm going to say is, Rich, your points are well considered and well made. We also need to consider that Paige has a green sack, and that could move him up
that's
or down.
True. Dude just needs some probiotics.
I might have a counter pick here.
Okay.
So what if we went with all of these factors in mind? Uh-huh. What if we made Paige the new number 38 after Nina Williams, but above Johnny Cage?
So
his sack would
Paige
be above
Cage.
Johnny Cage in order to be, you know. Greek.
Oh, okay.
That and feels you good, know
what?
You know.
What more convincing do we need from that? Paige's green sack will hang over Johnny Cage on this list. So Paige for Beyond Good and Evil, as the science dictated, of course, is our 38th best video game character of all time, which makes him the 20th worst as our list has grown to 58 characters. Thank you very much for your consideration there, everybody. I feel like we got to the bottom of Paige a little bit. I was excited to talk about Paige because Beyond Good and Evil is a game that I always look forward to talking
about. I'm going
to go
and play that game somehow because it sounds both crazy, and anybody who loves Beyond Good and Evil loves to tell you how good Beyond Good and Evil is, so I feel like it's It's a necessity. I've got to go and find some way to do that before the inevitable sequel definitely comes out in the near future, because it's definitely going to come out.
Definitely real.
Yeah, it's going to be released right after Skull and Bones.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
So now, Leah, you brought it up now, and I don't want to make the listener wait any longer with just, you know, Leah mentioned that Pyramid Head should be hired, and Brian said, they might, you know, maybe we should talk about this later. Let's just get this out of the bag right now. We're going to do an entire episode dedicated to re-ranking this list. We're going to go over it, fine-tooth comb. We're going to go over each individual one, and I think it's a good way to bring our new listeners up to speed with every character we've got on the list.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some characters that clearly belong where they are, looking at you, Chadley. But there are others that I think that we really need to consider. So what I was going to suggest to you, and I said I would not do this, but here I am doing it on a recording, is that our 23rd episode of the Character Issues podcast, two episodes from now, we make that the great re-rank-a-palooza. Objections to that?
None from me. I think that that sounds good.
I'm going to have to get my thinking cap on. This is an important and auspicious day in the Character Issues calendar, the first annual Rankapalooza.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we should do it every 23 episodes, because there are 23 lunar cycles in the scientific process that dictates this list. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fair.
True.
So moving forward with tonight's rankings, we are going to move on to Rich. I believe we said that yours was slightly better than fucking a hole in Chadley's head.
That's a direct quote.
But if there's
yes.
a character who can get behind it, here he comes. Who did you bring to the table, Rich?
Only the sexiest character in video games history. Look, I don't want to be one of those people that goes to the well, but sometimes when I'm thinking about video games, first thing that comes to my mind is a specific character is fighting games, because there's often a incredible range of characters with cool backstories, like very visible kind of interesting looks that are going there, and today is absolutely no different. I'm going to go back to a series that I quite like. I'm definitely way more familiar with the first kind of two games in the timeline, but I've gone for a character who is quite frankly an incredibly what's the right way of saying this without implicating myself, interesting sexy character. it's from the Soul Calibur series, Soul Blade, whichever one you want to go. It's the Italian merchant bodyguard. It's Valdo. So Valdo.
Man, I can't wait to hear what the Character Issues Orchestra comes up with for that one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's going to be bouncy.
Where to begin? I think, so from the start, Valdo is not actually as interesting as you might think. His backstory's just not really that fully fleshed out. It's kind of, like I mentioned in the intro there, he's basically just a bodyguard for an Italian arms merchant. That's kind of about it. That's all you get in the first Soul Blade. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure as you go along, it's kind of woven in with kind of other Soul Blade characters. But he's a super interesting character. So, I mean, cards on the table. Valdo is essentially like a poster boy for sadomasochism. He's kind of all in bondage gear. He may as well have a gimp ball in his mouth, and
I think he kind of does in some of his
yes, he definitely does
in some of his costumes.
Yeah. I mean, that dude wears the shit out of a card piece, and power to him. You know, it's a bold look. He's just like a really strange character. It's like every other character in Soul Blade was motion captured, but Valdo is basically what happens when one character animator gets given free rein to go and do stuff, and he just moves in a really awkward and uncomfortable way. I'm not sure if he's evil or just plain bizarre, or maybe my fragile mind kind of associates the two with one another. Like, I mean, before we get kind of any further on, are both you guys familiar with the Soul Calibur series?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes.
Cool. Okay, so I mean, I'm assuming, Brian, that Valdo is your main, yeah?
So I wouldn't say Valdo was my main. I was definitely one of those horrible, like, I got Soul Calibur 2 so I can play as Link guys for the GameCube. But Valdo, I endeared very quickly to Valdo because he can stay so goddamn low.
Yeah.
He can just, like, he can just slink on the ground like a fucking weirdo worm and just, like... just, like, come over and, like, I'm not sure if he's going to stab me or, like, wrap me up in his weird body. I don't know.
Spank you. And, you know.
A lot going on.
Whip you.
A lot going on.
Tease you, Brian.
He just has, I mean, he has a whole lot of different attachments for his claws. You know, one of them is definitely a paddle. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, 100%. No doubt. I mean, yeah, let's kind of do that. Valdo is a character who is, he's basically got two katas, which are like fist-based weapons, which puts him in this unique position in the Soul Blade series, because everybody else has kind of got like staff, sword, usual stuff. But his, I guess, martial art is super interesting. He's basically a contortionist. So everything that he does just has this really bizarre acrobatic stroke kind of like contortionist stuff that's going on. It's just a dead interesting character to play, like something really interesting to see as well. And I can't think of any other character that's kind of got that really bizarre fighting style. Maybe like Dr. Bozkonovich from Tekken 3 or something like that. Like he's just all over the place, dead low, like Brian's saying. And
yeah, I think of the Drunken Master from Virtua Fighter 2 a lot. Just like they fight very differently, but it's just like the fluidity of everything they do. Like everything's bendy and kind of like it's so liquid. Valdo just seems so goddamn wet. It's so weird. I know.
I don't know whether it's worse to think of Kirby as wet or Valdo as wet. I think they're both.
Valdo's
no,
more.
There's
Valdo's,
the ship.
Valdo's
there's
more
the
lubed
ship right
than
there.
Wet,
Kirby
though,
and
you know?
Valdo.
Did you say he's more lubed than wet?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean.
That's fair.
I mean, the other thing is, I don't think there's any getting around it. He has that kind of allusion to, like, sadomasochism, really, just in everything from his kind of get up to the fact that he's sort of in bondage. He's got like his mouth's been gagged up. He kind of tends to be all shaved and put in bondage gear. There's a lot of spikes on every orifice of his, and there's a sort of like peculiar like intimacy about some of the things that he does. Like he gets his groin up close and all that sort of stuff. It's like a really unique character, I think, and certainly one befitting of a Valentine's Day like appropriate character issues thing.
I don't typically play a lot of fighting games. We talked about Tekken recently, and that was one that I got into really kind of only for one installment. But Soul Calibur 2 came out at a really good time for me to be playing with other people, because it was around when I was in college and I had a group of people that I would be playing sometimes more mainstream fighting games and sometimes weird shit like, there was something for the Xbox that I'll have to, I'll pull it for next week and see if I can. Oh no, it was Tao Feng Fist of the Lotus.
Yes,
yeah, we played a lot of that. But you know, and we played a lot of Smash Brothers, you know, but one of the other things that we played was Soul Calibur 2. And I think specifically we were playing the Xbox version because I seem to remember Spawn being our extra character. Yeah.
And it was Heihachi in the PS2 version, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Spawn. We had a couple of characters that were house banned, and I think the extra character may have been one of them. But yeah, that one of the characters that I actually played quite a bit was Valdo, and he's because he is so different from the other characters, it can kind of make him hard to read if you're trying to.
100%.
And I mean, I'm sure that if you are super familiar with all of the characters, you know, if you are a professional fighting game type person, then, you know, it might not be as much of a big deal. But I mean, if you're just kind of fucking around with, you know, your friends, then the fact that Valdo is always moving and is always kind of undulating, it can just make it difficult to kind of figure out what he's going to do next. So in that case, he's pretty effective as and also he kind of psych you out because like he is intimidating sometimes. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, no. So I am quite familiar with Valdo is where I'm going with this.
May I take some time to pull from a wiki just to give you like a sense of something that might help out with the Rangan here? So this is in the Soul Edge, which is the PS1 kind of very early on PS1 game. An excellent game, I still maintain. Soul Edge ending. Valdo opens the door to Virchi's tomb. He approaches the throne, but begins to rub Soul Edge on his face.
Of course he does.
By pressing left, then right very quickly, Valdo begins to caress the blade faster and faster until it shatters, and Valdo slumps downward looking at the pieces in despair, while he hears Virchi, who's the merchant, exclaiming his name. Wow, that's a powerful and erotic imagery there, I'm sure. Something else that's worth mentioning, Valdo, relationships, parents, deceased. Wonderful.
Shocking. Can I read another piece of information from his biography here? So what I'd like to focus on is actually his age.
I was going to say this.
Yeah. Okay. So according to this wiki, Valdo was 43 years old at the original Soul Edge, 46 during the original Soul Calibur, 50 during Soul Calibur 2-4, and then 67, though manifested for a time. I'm sorry, does that say malfested?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Malfested for a time. I don't know what that means.
What the fuck does malfested mean?
So this man, y'all, I am the oldest of us here. I turned 42 this past week, and I can't do that. Like, my body does not move that way. It never did. He's doing this up through his almost 70s.
Like, yeah, it makes you feel like he's almost compelled, like he's like possessed to do this.
Like reanimated.
He doesn't have a choice. Yeah. Yeah.
He's got some joint flexibility that I do not possess.
I have to believe that he, along with Marilyn Manson, as rumor would have you believe, had a rib removed so he could fillet himself. And I think that's really the source of his power. I couldn't say that without laughing. Sorry.
So I took a risk. I typed the word malfested into my Google machine.
Oh, is it a word that they made up?
Yes, it is. Oh, good. It's a term used to describe those tainted by Soul Edge, its shards, or the evil seed, which I'm pretty sure Voldo's been gargling on evil seed for as long.
That's what happened.
As...
That's what came out when he broke the sword in the original Soul Edge.
What happened? Yes. Oh man, he's. So I share almost your experience with Voldo completely, Leah, to the fact that like somebody's new sitting down to play Soul Calibur, like, oh, yeah, I don't really know what character. Like, I would either have them play as Ivy, who has the cool-ass whip sword, because there's a lot of range, or Voldo, because Voldo's just low and quick and can get in. You could mash a bunch of buttons, do some cool stuff. So
that's a good shout. That is a good shout. Voldo, for me, was the, you know, the training dummy character. The one that you always put in the training just to kick his ass because it's seemingly quite satisfying. I suspect that says a lot about me and my inherent fear of S&M stuff. But I'll tell you what, I'll take it to the shrink and I'll come back next week with a view of like exactly how that went down and what it means for me.
Cool.
Perfect. Well, I thank you for bringing this beautiful disaster to our podcast this week, Rich. Do you have anything else to add before we think about placing this apparently old man on our list?
Yep. I just think Valdo is a cool character, like a really interesting pick. He's like the most, in my opinion, from my perspective, the most character issues fucking character possible. Like, just so much going for him, and yet so little. It's all to do with your own imagination. So it makes it really difficult to rank. But looking at the list, I kind of want to give Valdo a bit of a bump because I don't suppose he's the most sort of, you know, admittedly not the most interesting character in terms of his backstory, sort of subservient, but like super powerful looks and like an interesting character to play as, and something that makes Soul Edge stand out because it comes from that era of early 3D fighting games where everything kind of felt of a kind of type. Like there was your Ryu and Ken style characters or your Kazuya and Paul Phoenix-style characters, and then you just have this guy. It's the same type of thing that Namco did with Yoshimitsu, you know? He's just like a really interesting character that breaks the norm and the stereotype, and I just want to kind of get him recognized there. So put a gun to my head and ask Guerrero, put Voldo. It's that kind of age-old thing, like, how does he rate in response to Chris Redfield? And I don't know if Voldo's as kind of enigmatic as Chris Redfield. Going down the list, you've got Tizo. Again, I think Tizo's way more interesting than Voldo is. And then Morgana, who, yeah, Morgana's an old-timer for me. I think Morgana kind of brings so much to Persona 5. But I do want to kind of put him above Pain, who kind of shares that sadomasochistic sort of like edgelord, gothy kind of ulterior fashion kind of thing going on. So I would probably put Voldo as the new number 23. Which is, new number 24, one below Morgana and one above Pain from Final Fantasy X2.
So I had a very similar thought, Rich. So I'm going to share mine first before we get to you, Leah, because if you vary wildly, then we can discuss afterwards. I was actually looking at Voldo to go one less than that, to be the new 25. Because I just imagine an eternity of Pain taking her high-heeled stiletto and just grinding it into Voldo's codpiece underneath
her. Again, Deviant Offline, I'm pretty sure I can help you out with this one if you've searched hard enough.
I just feel that Voldo would, because of his nature and his clear, what appears to be involvement in the S&M community, I think that he would very much be dominated happily by Pain, and that would be my thought for the placing on the list. Now, Leah, do you have strong feelings?
So initially, I was actually thinking of Voldo at a slightly higher position, and it would have been as the new number 19.
Oh wow!
Okay,
I pretty strongly feel that Voldo is a character that fits on this list. Rich, you said that he is a very character issues character, and I agree with that. And also for me, from the personal side of science, because that's a thing, I actually do have a history with the games gentleman.
This young gimp.
Young gimp is my rap name.
On a very special episode of This Young Gimp.
I was going to place him because I did the traditional is he better than Dracula thing, and no, I don't think he's better than Dracula, but I do think he's a pretty high ranker for me. If you guys feel that his correct place is down with Pain, then I will stand by that. But I will also say that I'm opening the door to have him listed higher if we feel that that's appropriate.
So I have a suggestion here.
Okay.
I think your instincts are sound, Leah. I am fine with Voldo going into the number 19 spot. What I will suggest, though, and this is to you, Rich, we ranked Morgana before Rich was on the show.
It's true.
I think that a big part of our 23rd episode is going to be looking at some of these characters. I really think in this stretch here from kind of, let's say, 10 to 25, and there's going to be some significant movement there. So while I agree with you that Morgana is an all-timer, and I do agree with that, I think that maybe Voldo does go into that 19th spot with the knowledge that maybe two recordings, maybe Morgana's not going to be where she currently
is. That's a good shout, you know. And narratively, you know, it sounds good that Voldo, like, instinctively might be below Pain, but it does make a lot of sense to put Voldo above Pain because, actually, Voldo is more of a power bottom.
That's true. Well, we're going to power bottom him right into the 19 spot is what we're going to do. So, Voldo from Soul Calibur, Soul Edge, from your nightmares or dreams or both, is now the number 19, the 19th best video game character of all time. Rich, how do you feel
fucking
about that?
I had no idea that we would find Voldo so endearing, but I thought he had a chance. But it exceeded my wildest expectations. I am more so both intrigued and sort of slightly horrified to find that Valdo is so endeared by Wanda Hedu.
I think we are a wonderful collection of weirdos that record this podcast, and I think Voldo fits in very nicely with the three of us, is what I will say.
the new character issue's mascot, Voldo.
So speaking of completely normal characters, Leah, I see you've been, as spoken before, you've been playing Yakuza again recently.
I have.
This is now your sixth or seventh Yakuza game, depending on how you count everything. And so who have you brought from us today from that franchise? It's got to be someone huge. Like, it's got to be like Majima or Saijima or Daigo Dojima or like, you know, the florist of Sotenbori. Like, it's one of these big characters, right?
As you know, and Rich, as you know, even though I know you're not the biggest Yakuza fan, there are a lot of notable characters in the Yakuza franchise. There are, that's one of the, I would say, probably strongest features of the Yakuza franchise, is establishing these personalities that, you know, you grow to care about and that you grow to have a vested interest in their story and what happens to them. So, of course, as you say, Brian, I've chosen a very important character in the Yakuza franchise.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, that character is Mr. Libido.
We're humping, and we're scrumping. We're humping all the year. Yes, we can't stop. Humping, can't stop. Humping, Mr. Libido. Ah, Mr. Libido.
So, Mr. Libido is a character that I don't think shows up again after Yakuza 0, but there are a couple of Mr. Libidos. The one that I am specifically talking about is the one that you, is kind of the Mr. Libido Prime, shall we say.
Yes.
He's the one progenitor, that you meet in kind of the first area.
Yeah.
And he is just this dude who runs around Sotenbori with wearing a pair of tighty whities and a pair of sneakers and talks about how much he likes to wreck the weasel. And he's a delight.
Oh, wreck a weasel. Yeah, I mean, if ever there was a euphemism for masturbation, there it is.
So Leah.
Yes.
Yakuza is a series that embraces a lot of different kinks, I would say.
It does.
There are lots of scenes with, let's say, grown men who like being treated like babies, for example. There is in Yakuza Like a Dragon, there are grown men who you fight, but they're so lubed up with suntan lotion, they can't even stand up, so they can never actually attack you. Let's just say, all slices of life appear in the Yakuza games.
That's true.
What about Mr. Libido? What draws him to you? What about him?
I think it's really just that he is so, he's just so confident with who he is and what he's there to do. And what he's there to do is buff the baloney, which is another direct quote that I am pulling from this wiki here. You expect people to, if you're going to see your baby dressing men, etc., you're probably going to see them in a club or in, you know, some place where they have chosen to congregate. Mr. Libido's just kind of everywhere. Like, you see him on the street, first of all, and, you know, it's a question of why in the world is this mostly naked man just dancing on the side of the street? And then he shows up in the club later, and I don't even think you interact with him at that time. You just kind of see him in a corner just thrusting away. And he has a very one-track mind, and
So tell me more about his personality, specifically from the wiki.
So the wiki has about four sentences in it. He has a one-track mind being driven by his obsession with masturbation and women. What I find interesting, speaking of the wiki, though, is that apparently he is modeled after an actual actor.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, I did when I was pulling this up, and you know, I did a Google search just for him to find the wiki page, and there are pictures of I guess it's the actor that he's based on, and you know, just yep, that guy is now immortalized as a Sotenbori's sex fiend.
You can actually befriend him as Majima, I believe.
You can, yeah.
So there's a real small sub story attached to him, and the way that you befriend him is by collecting telephone cards. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're unfamiliar with telephone cards, if anybody's ever been to Las Vegas, a city in the United States of America that you perhaps heard of, there are lots of people on the street handing you telephone cards, which are cards with pictures of ladies that you can call for what I believe the street vendors would say a good time.
Oh.
I don't know what the good time involves. Mr. Libido certainly
knows. I
love
good times.
Who doesn't?
Exactly.
Sounds
wholesome.
So you can befriend him by collecting these cards, which I think is nice. It's a nice olive branch for Majima to extend to another misfit, right? Another misfit in this story.
Yeah. You know, nobody ever really tries to tell him he shouldn't be doing what he's doing.
He's a free spirit. You know, you can't contain him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Both Majima and I'm pretty sure that Kiryu actually meets him as well. You know, they're not telling him, oh my god, I can't believe you, you're such a fucking pervert, you know, you need to get inside and put some clothes on. They might be a little off-put, maybe, a little bit iffy on what this man's doing, mm-hmm. but still, it's his choice, it's what makes him happy, and they're not trying to shame him for that, you know? I don't think anybody ever tells this man to put on some pants.
It seems like a dangerous proposition befriending this guy, because I'm pretty sure there is an element of guilty by association. Like, if you do nothing to stop him, then are you as culpable as he is? Or indeed, are you more culpable than
he is? Well, but what's he guilty of when you think about it?
Being rad?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that there is any implication that he is, you know, forcing himself on anybody or doing anything that is not completely consensual. He likes to go visit the ladies in the clubs.
Uh-huh.
And he just likes he likes to masturbate furiously whenever he can.
I mean, that's a song we can all sing along to, isn't it?
True.
If you befriend him, you can now buy a restorative item called the Incomparable uh-huh. Habu Drink,
yeah. mm-hmm.
Which is Habu is Mr. Libido's you know Christian name.
Yes.
And
Habu and, Libido.
And what? and what that drink does is it just fills your heat and your health a little bit, just a little mm-hmm. little pick me up. Mm-hmm. I mean, what else? What else do you need?
His aliases, of course, being Walking Erection. Uh-huh. And Mr.
Wow.
Libido.
That's a powerful alias. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Can I read the entirety of the entry under Yakuza
Please
Zero?
Do.
Please.
Habu is first seen during Majima's investigation of the rival club, The Odyssey, where he is thrusting half-clothed in a stairwell. He later approaches Majima outside of the telephone club, but runs off soon afterwards.
Beautiful.
And yep. scene.
And that's it.
Any questions, Rich?
No questions, just observations. I mean, I'm looking at a few screenshots, Your Honor, and I think the first thing I uh-huh. see is just this quote here. Lord knows what he's talking about, but he says, "That's dedication. I go wherever my urges take me without thinking about anything." I admire his free spirit, his kind of like, you know, he's just not burdened by what society thinks. He just follows his heart, and I guess by heart, I mean erection, and he's just not shackled by what society expects of him. I don't think he's dangerous necessarily. I think he's just a wayward soul, somebody who can't be tamed. And I think there really is a Mr. Libido in all of us when you think about it.
It's very true.
As I'm going to paste into our chat a picture of the inspiration for Mr. Libido.
Okay, very good. I think this is important for the ranking.
Yeah.
There. Okay.
Look at him.
Yep.
I just feel like that's important.
It's a spot on. I'd say they did him justice with the representation on screen. I don't have any more questions, but I do have some concerns.
Go
on. My concern is that is Mr. Libido ever satisfied?
Oh, wow.
Is he a character that we should raise up onto a pedestal and champion someone living life to their truest vision of themselves? Or is he a cursed character forced to wander the streets humping at air for eternity?
He does dance, though.
No, he do dance. He does dance. God damn it, does he dance. All right, Leah, rank this son of a bitch. Where do you think Mr. Libido goes on this list? I mean, you could say number two or number 58, and I would not be surprised.
Let's see. Here's what's keeping me from putting Mr. Libido high on the list. And it's that he's just not very fleshed out, shall we say.
God damn it.
He's very flaccid, you know.
Yeah, a bit. So I think that I'm going to recommend that we start down somewhere around his fellow sex pest, Vincent Brooks.
Okay.
And in fact, I think I would like to place him... I think I actually want to place him a little bit higher than that. I think I want to recommend that we begin at number 44. So between Mallow and Viggo Rolig.
From SSX3, yes.
Because I feel like Mallow is just, you know, a really good counterpoint to this libido man. Because he's just a big sweet marshmallow boy. And then I think that from what I have been able to ascertain, he is similar to Viggo in that he doesn't have a ton of backstory to him. It's mostly what you see is what you get. So I think that that's where I will start off.
I don't have problems with that. What I was looking at, I was kind of looking below and seeing who has either better personality or more personality than Mr. Libido. And there's not many below. I'd say that, Funky Kong, but Funky Kong turned into an arms dealer. We know that.
True.
Waka's a racist. Boogerman is Boogerman. Maybe we're doing Glass Joe a bit of a disservice, but, I mean, he just screams, hom, baguette. Like, so he's, like, the worst. I think that we've got a bunch of empty vessels and kind of soul suckers at the bottom of this list. I mean, really the dregs, the worst of the worst. And
yeah.
I think that you might be onto something with this 44 spot for Mr. Libido. Now, I'm not sure how Rich is going to feel having Mr. Libido be just above his sweet Swedish fanboy from SSX3, even though Rich did abandon the entire country of Sweden during the last recording. Mm-hmm. So, Rich, what do you think about that?
Instantly had no strong feelings about where to put Mr. Libido, because the thing about Mr. Libido is it's not what you know about him. It's what you don't know about him. So is this man mentally disturbed? Is he just a hedonist who's kind of free of what society expects of him? Is he a man who just knows what he wants and we should admire him for that? It's difficult to say, but when you think about him next to Viggo Rolig, a young gentleman who famously loves teal cut boxer briefs or whatever the case may be, you can see that there's instantly something there.
Yeah, boxer briefs, yeah.
Also, Viggo Rolig is famously another hedonist as well, so it sounds like it could be about right. Now, really the question I need to ask is he higher than Viggo or not? And I think he might be, because I think there's a redemption arc in here for Mr. Libido, not unlike a famous somebody who famously came out in the late 90s as having a sex addiction, one David Duchovny, who did go on a redemption arc in much the same way. Miss Libido, I am saying, is the David Duchovny of the video games world. And for that, I think we need to recognize that he sits naturally above the best snowboarder on the list, I suppose, one Viggo Rolig. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. And it's an astute placement from you, Leah, there. I think you've hit the nail straight on that head.
You know, we will have to rank David Duchovny eventually. There have been plenty of X-Files
for sure.
Games.
Yes,
for sure.
We'll get to you.
And what was that shitty one? Evolution? Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yes. God. Right,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Great.
I don't know if there's a game for that, but maybe.
So, Mr. Libido is there now the 44th best video game character of all time. And that means that we have now ranked 60. Holy cow, look at all 60 of these. You can see the entire list in the show notes as you're listening to this. Follow through at home with your, you know, home version of the board game. Before I kick it over to Rich to let everybody know where they can find us on our socials, I'd like to say that next episode, as I so eloquently put it earlier in this show, is an even-numbered episode, so there will be a theme. And that theme has been decided by our one Leah Haydu, who has decided that the theme will be characters who did not originate in video games. So, for example, if I wanted to nominate Peter Griffin from that horrible Family Guy game, I could nominate him. If I wanted to nominate Mike Tyson from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, who was a real person before he was in a video game, I could nominate them. So for those of you who listen to the show and participate on social media, look out for the prompt where you will be able to suggest characters for potential inclusion in the recording of a next episode.
And I was about to be like, did I say that? But I think that was during the stream, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was a great choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Rich, why don't you tell all the fine fellows where they can find us on
Primarily, we would encourage you to go through to Twitter with @issuescharacter to follow all of the hot, juicy gossip that that we put on there.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
If you want to follow Brian independently, you can do so with BrianTendo64, myself @FMRuin, and Leah is @Improbable42, of course.
And I'd just like to say thank you to both of you again for going on this journey with us tonight. Leah, thank you for bringing Mr. Libido. I really do appreciate the energy that he brings to the list, as well as Rich bringing Voldo, who I think...
We really written the direction on this one, huh?
Cool, yeah. Chalice for all.
I felt like I... Yes, exactly. that just leaves me to thank you, the listener, for tuning into us again for episode 21 of the Characters Issue podcast. Check out social media. Get involved with the suggestion for the next episode. We can rank your character on the list, and we will have all the pertinent updates there for updates to the show moving forward. So that just leaves me to say our Character Issues catchphrase we say at the end of every episode, cold showers for everyone!